Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nerevin, daf Kuf Dalet. Today, tomorrow, we finish the Masechta. And Shabbos, we start a new Masechta. We're going to be learning Shabbos before Mincha. We're going to be making a Siyum. So I'll make sure that's in the weekly. But anyway, time for Shabbos is going to be an hour before Mincha. And in the meantime, we are on Kuf Gimel. We just barely made it to Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. We asked the following question. There seems to be a discrepancy between the Mishnah in Erevin and the Mishnah in Pesach. The Mishnah in Erevin says that you are allowed to remove a yabelas. The animal has a wart on it. The wart would represent a blemish. It'd be a mum. The animal cannot be offered as a carbon. So on Shabbos, what you can do, says our Mishnah in Erevin, is you can take the wart off. You can only do it with your hand. You can't take it off with a knife, but the point is that you're allowed to remove it. That is our Mishnah in Erevin. The Mishnah in Pesachim says you can't do it. When you bring your Karban Pesach to Yerushalayim, and let's say that this particular year, Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, so now I want to remove the abelis off, the animal off my Karban Pesach, so the Mishnah in Pesachim says you cannot do that. Rabbi Lazar disagrees, but fine. But that's the Mishnah in Pesachim. So I have a very simple discrepancy between our Mishnah and Erevin, the Mishnah Pesachim, and the Gemara offers four answers. Of the four answers, yesterday we went through three of the four answers. Just quickly to review, one answer is that our Mishnah and Erevin is talking about removing it with your hand. That's allowed. The Mishnah Pesachim is talking about removing it with a kli. That's prohibited. Another answer of the Gemara is our Mishnah and Erevin is talking about removing a dry yabelis. Basically, it's dried up. It's pretty much dead skin. And all I'm doing is just scraping off the dead skin. That our Mishnah says it's fine. The Mishnah in Pesachim is talking about when it's moist. A third answer of the Gemara, and I'm really summarizing because the Gemara pointed out that there are weaknesses in each one of the answers that I just gave. A third answer of the Gemara is the following. Really, there is no fundamental difference between the Mishnah Erev and the Mishnah Pesachim. I'm sorry, there's no real difference in terms of the case. In both cases, we're talking about removing it with the hand. So what's the difference? Why does our Mishnah say it's okay and the Mishnah in Pesachim says it's not okay? It's not acceptable? It's because you're talking about karbanos being operated by the Kohanim versus Karbanos being operated by we the people. Karbanos operated by the Kohanim, Kohanim are very careful. So in other words, removing abelis with your hand is only an issa derabbanan, it's not an issa deraisa. And the Kohanim are right now in charge, and they're going to be careful to know the difference between removing it with a hand versus removing it with a knife. As we've discussed already a number of times, most of the Isuri Derabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash are waived, and they're waived because the Kohanim are very careful people. They're going to ensure that they know the line between something which is Mutter and something which is Aser. We, the people who aren't as careful, so therefore we're given Isuri Derabbanan. We're given safeguards in order to ensure that we're not going to violate Isuri Daraisa. But the Kohanim are more careful. So our Mishnah Erevin that says that you can remove the Yabelis, that's talking about the Kohanim. They know what they're doing. They can remove the Yabelis with their hands. We, the people, that's the Mishnah in Pesachim. Because the Mishnah in Pesachim is talking about Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach is a carbon that is operated by we, the people. So we don't do the actual avoda with the Karban Pesach, but we basically take care of it. So we, the people, we can't take off the yabelis with our hands. That is answer number three. The problem with answer number three, as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, is that we do find other places in Kachim, in the world of Kachim, when even the Kachim is in our hands, meaning not in the Kohen's hands, we could still waive the Isuri Derabbanan. The best example the Gemara gave yesterday is that, let's say, Erev Pesach falls out on a Friday, which means then that we're going to be roasting our Karban Pesach right before Shabbos. We're going to put it on the fire right before Shabbos. Generally speaking, when you're preparing food for Shabbos, that's a no-no. You're not allowed to put up the food right before Shabbos. The food has to be cooked going into Shabbos. The concern of the Chachamim is Shemi Yechat Begachalim. I may come and stoke the coals. So to which the Gemara said that, okay, but it's Erev Pesach and it's a Karban, and you can put the food up right before Shabbos. And we can waive the Isser of Shem Yechat B'Gachalim. So that's a very good case study in which you see that even for us, even for we the people, when we're dealing with Kachim, we can waive Isseri Derabbanan. So, and the Gemara leaves that off as a question.
Is
that Kachim? Huh? Karban Pesach is Kachim. Right. I mean, for a moment, the Gemara thought yesterday that it's just holding a Sefer Torah is also Kachim. Okay, but yeah, Karban Pesach for sure is Kachim. Okay, and that takes us to where we got to yesterday. On the last two lines of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, And now we're going to go with our fourth approach. So again, the issue here is very straightforward. The Mishnah in Erevin, our Mishnah, in the 10th parak of Erevin, says that you can remove the yabelas from the animal even on Shabbos. The Mishnah Psachim says you're not allowed to remove it. And so now, Rava Amar, Rabbi Eliezer, he, Damar Machjira Mitzvah Dochenes HaShabbos. So the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Now, right, Ben expressed the perfect question. How could that be? Meaning, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, now we know his position is you could do Machshirin. Meaning that not only can I do the actual avodah itself on Shabbos, that's a given, but I can do any of the preparatory acts as well. So, like by Mila, we gave the example yesterday, that if I don't have the knife, so I can cut down a tree in order to make fire, so I can melt metal in order to make a knife. Okay, that's a lot of steps, but Rabbi Eliezer says that's fine. So in other words, by Machshirin, Rabbi Eliezer will allow you to do all the prep activity. Even if it's in violation of Isuri Daraisa, it doesn't matter. Rabbi Eliezer says Machshirin or Docha. Now again, we don't pass like Rabbi Eliezer, but that's not the point right now. The point right now is that we have a discrepancy between Mishnayos. So the Gemara turns to our Mishnah and says our Mishnah is being authored by Rabbi Eliezer. Now, the question that really is glaring us right in the face is the following. Our Mishnah says that you rip off the yabelas with your hand, but not with a knife. Now hold on a second. If the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer will not make any distinction between ripping off your hands versus cutting it off with a knife. Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin to be done. So why does our Mishnah say, oh, but don't do it with a knife? If, in fact, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer. That's a powerful question, but to that, Rav is going to come up with a principle. Rav is going to tell us that even Rabbi Eliezer, who allows Machshirin, but we don't have carte blanche, we don't have absolute license to do whatever we want, even when we're allowed to do it, we should minimize the amount of Chilul Shabbos is involved. The Gemara says, I'm going to read inside, Rav Amar Rabbi Lazihi Damar Machshir Mitzvah Dochen Sa Shabbos Umo De Rabbi Eliezer Dikama De Efshar L'Shanuye Mishaninan. Still, what we should try to do is we should try to do B'Shinui. We should do it in a slightly different manner. By doing so in a Shinui, we're going to be reducing the amount of Chilul Shabbos. In other words, now with the Shinui, it's no longer Nisra Daraisa, it's at worst Nisra Darabanan. And anyway, Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin. And so that is going to be our fourth approach to resolve the discrepancy between our Mishnah Erevin and the Mishnah Psachim. Yeah, right. So, which is basically going to be the Gemara's next question. In fact, you turn the page, you look at the next two words of the Gemara, Maihi. Maihi is, as Rashi explains, the Gemara is asking, where did you get this from? Where do we see that according to Rabbi Eliezer, even when you're doing machshirin, they have to be done with a shinui? Where does that come from? So the time, so the Gemara quotes a braisa. Now this is going to be a very interesting braisa and a very indelicate braisa. So I apologize for the indelicacy, but the braisa is trying to make a point. The Tanya we learned in a braisa, kohen shalta bo yavelas. Let's say you have a kohen who has a growth on his body, and he would like to do the avoda. Now, not only does the animal have to be a non-blemished animal, the kohen performing the avoda also has to be belimum. He also has to be an unblemished kohen. So what he wants to do now is he wants to remove the abelis. He wants to remove the wart off his body. Obviously, we're talking about it's on Shabbos. So what do we do? So the Braisa says, Shaltabo yabels chavera chotcholo b'shinav. So the Braisa gives the solution, which is, have a friend, and obviously it's got to be a very good friend, have a friend come over and have him bite off your wart with his teeth. Okay, ad kan divrei HaBraisa, that is the end of the Braisa. Okay, it's indelicate, but again, we're just trying to make a point over here. Now, what exactly is the point that we're trying to make? So, b'shinav in b'kli lo. So in other words, look how strange all this is. First of all, in other words, you're asking your friend to cut it off, fine. He can't use a knife, he's got to use his teeth. And furthermore, chaveru in iulo. And also, did you notice that you're getting someone else to bite it off? Why don't you just bite it off yourself? Meaning, okay, good, I understand shinui, but just you yourself should do it. So in other words, there are two oddities in this braisa in terms of the removal of the wart. Have somebody else do it, and have him bite it off with his teeth. Okay, we are going to redefine what the term friendship really is. Meaning, you now know, you now know, right? I say this to my kids all the time, meaning how many friends do you have in this world? Friends meaning like people who are ready to extend themselves to you. And, right, most of us don't have a lot of them, but I'll speak for myself. But in other words, but here you really get to know who your friends are. So who's the author of this Braisa? Now, money. Now, here's the tricky part of the daf, and from here until the Mishnah is coming up in just a couple lines from now, it is going to be tricky, because essentially what the Gemara now is going to try to do is assign authorship of the Braisa, and there's going to be a lot of forensic work, meaning it's not clear who the author of the Braisa is, and the Gemara is going to adduce a lot of speculation in terms of trying to determine who the author of the Braisa is. Now, Ilema Rabbanan Uve Mikdash, Kevin Dami Rabban Ba'ama Mishum Shvos, Hacha Mali Hu Mali Chavero. Now, what is it? It's a Shitas Chachamim? Hard to imagine, because, again, if we're talking about Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to violate Isuri Derabanan. So you don't have to go through this very odd procedure of A, having someone else come and take it off, and B, having him remove it with his teeth. Meaning, if it's just, all I need to do is just get to an Isuri Derabanan, so instead of cutting it off with a knife, I'll rip it off with my hand. Meaning, that's all you need to do according to the Chachamim. So to assign authorship of this Braisa to the Chachamim seems to be misplaced. The Chachamim don't require this very odd procedure. So, So it must be that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Eliezer. It must be that we're looking at an Isur Daraisa, Chiv Chatas, the removing of the Yabelas. Now, yes, it's true, Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin to be done. And yes, it's true, Machshirin is Docha Shabbos. But Kama De'efshar L'shanuyeh Mishaninan. But any form of deviation that you could possibly do, you'll do it. Meaning that even according to Rabbi Eliezer, he prefers, there's an allowance to do it, but he prefers it to be done with the Shinui. You should try to deviate. So again now, so this is now the argument the Gemara is making. We are in the middle of Rava's answer. Rava says that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin, but Rava comes up with a principle, which is that even Rabbi Eliezer, who allows Machshirin, wants it to be done with the Shinui, try to minimize the amount of Chilul Shabbos. How do I know that this is so? So the Gemara quoted a Braisa. A Braisa which describes an oddity, that the removal of a Yabelis off the Kohen should be done by his friend, by his teeth. So who is the author? So what the Gemara is arguing now is that the author is Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Look, the Gemara says, well, we can continue arguing this last point that we just made. La'olam Rabbanan. And maybe the author of the Braisa is the Chachamim, meaning even though we rejected that just about five lines ago, but maybe the author is the Chachamim. V'yalta b'kreiso achanami. Now, if the wart was growing on his stomach hard to imagine, but you know, on your arm, on the bottom of your leg. So in other words, hachanami, meaning so then you would bite it off yourself. What happened was is that it grew on your back. The wart grew on your back. Or on your elbows, on your outer elbows. In other words, places you simply can't reach with your own teeth. So in other words, can't that be the pshat in the Braisa? Right? Which, again, the Braisa doesn't give us a lot of information, so we're speculating, but that's not unreasonable. And he himself can't reach it, and that's why he turns to his friend and says, look, right, do me a solid. Okay, now, V'i Rabbanan. Now, if it's the Chachamim, Nishkaleni Alebiyad. Now, the Gemara says, okay, but still, even in this argument, it is strange. Meaning, you're having your friend bite it off. Why? Rip it off with your hand. Meaning, if the position over here, that if the author of the Braisa is not Rabbi Eliezer, and if the author of the Braisa is the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, all you need to do is reduce it down to an Issa Derabanan. That's all you need to do. So once I'm no longer removing it with a kli, so then just rip it off with your hand. And if it's on the back of the elbow and you can't reach it with your teeth, fine. So it's take your hand and take your other hand and remove it with your other hand. V'tifshah de Rabbi Elazar, dama Rabbi Elazar, machlokas b'yadav al b'kli divrei kol chayav. And Rabbi Elazar is of the position that the whole debate is with your hand, but with a kli, everyone would agree that you're chayev. Ula tamech le Rebbe Eliezer nami lishkal in the ala biyad. So the Gemara says, all right, if this is really your argument, why use your teeth? Why not use your hand? Can't you ask the same question when we were thinking that the author of the Brice is Rabbi Eliezer? Meaning, okay, so Rabbi Eliezer requires a deviation. Having your friend rip it off, isn't that enough of a shinui? Haimai, the Gemara says, look, it's not a good argument, and the comparison is not a good comparison. Iyamar Bishlam Rabbi Eliezer Haina Degazuyada Tukli. Look, if the author of the Brice is Rabbi Eliezer, I kind of understand. Meaning that fundamentally, machshirin is allowed on Shabbos. You're allowed to remove the wart. And the truth of the matter is you can remove it with your hand, you can remove it with a knife, fundamentally. But Rabbi Eliezer wants a shinui. So he wants you to deviate from what you normally do. Not to reduce it down to an issa derabanan. That's not really what's behind Rabbi Eliezer. But what's behind Rabbi Eliezer is the idea that we just want to do it with a shinui. So there, I kind of understand. Meaning, okay, don't just simply take it out with your hand. Take it out with your teeth. That'll be memorable. Why will that be memorable? But that's a real shinui. Ela'iyamart Rabbanan. But if the author of the Brice is the Chachamim, where the goal is to just simply get it from an Issa D'Raisa down to an Issa D'Rabbanan, if that's the whole goal, so Nishkale Nihale Biyad. So just take it. So then remove the wart with your hand. Because once you're no longer using an instrument, once I'm no longer using a knife, so now basically I moved it down from a D'Raisa down to a D'Rabbanan. So the idea that the Brice says, bite it off with your teeth, the author of that can't be the Chachamim, so Vesul Amidi. In fact, the Gemara says, this last point we just made is such a strong point, conversation is over. Meaning, the Gemara throws this out every now and then, when the Gemara gets into kind of like a loop of argument, and finally the Gemara breaks the argument by saying, this last point is really strong, there's really nothing more to discuss about it. It seems that the Gemara is extremely supportive of this idea of Rava. The idea of Rava is that according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that Machshirin Adochas HaShabbos, but even when you're doing the Machshirin, you should do it with a Shinu, you should do it in a somewhat changed manner, in an unusual manner. And I guess the idea behind that would be, again, this is just inserting very basic lamdas, but very basic, is that even when Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin to be done on Shabbos, it's not Hotra, it's not permitted, in other words, there isn't carte blanche to do it, but in other words, the Torah says it's okay, it's Dechuya. But in other words, but with the understanding that it's still Shabbos. So to any degree that you could do it in an unusual manner, so you should do it in an unusual manner. That perhaps could be the simple understanding of Rabbi Eliezer. Again, by the way, all this is lishma, meaning this is Torah lishma, because we know ultimately the halacha does not go like Rabbi Eliezer. So even though Rava may be right in his understanding of Rabbi Eliezer, but when all said and done, we don't pass like Rabbi Eliezer. So for us, it's Torah lishma. It's not an accepted position. Yeah. So when I say wart, first of all, let's understand. It could be I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not being facetious. I mean, I'm saying the word yabelis just simply means some growth on the body, which apparently could be easily removed. Okay, all right. Kohen shalaka be'etzba o korech alav gemi be'mikdash avalo be'medina im lahotzi dam kan v'kan aser. So now, again, moving on to our very overarching theme of the 10th perek, things you can do in the Beis HaMikdash but cannot be done. Don't try this at home. So you have a Kohen who got, say, some sort of cut or wound on his finger. So what you could do, says the Mishnah, wrap a little branch around it. In fact, the Gemara later on is going to point out, basically, I mean, without using the word aloe, meaning, but basically get some sort of branch which has therapeutic effects, even though that's an Isser of Refuah, but in this context, it's fine. And so wrap a gemi around it. And you could do that in the Beis HaMikdash. But you can't do that outside the Beis HaMikdash. And if your purpose is to express blood, meaning if you want to squeeze blood out, that is absolutely forbidden, categorically forbidden. That's an Issa D'Oraisa, to squeeze blood out of your body. And so therefore, Kan Aser would be Aser both inside and outside the Beis HaMikdash. What is wrong with squeezing blood? If you take a look at the last Rashi in the Mishnah, Rashi writes, Ein Zitzor Chavoda, first of all, you're squeezing blood for what purpose in terms of the Avoda? So you have no license to do so for the avoda. And then Rashi points out, and also that's chavala, that's causing a wound. We know, we learned it together in Shabbos. The parak was called Shmona Shratzim. So we learned together in Shabbos that causing a wound, inducing a wound on Shabbos is prohibited. So the Mishnah therefore says that you can't squeeze out the blood, but what you can do is you can wrap a gemi, the Kohen can wrap a gemi around his finger. I'm Rav Yehuda Bered Rav Chiya Loshanu Ella Gemi. Aval Tziltzol Katan Have Yisr Begadim. So first we start off with the opinion of Rav Yehuda Bered Rav Chiya. And he says like this. The Mishnah is very specific in terms of what you could wrap around your finger. When I say you, I mean the Kohen. The Kohen could take a little Tziltzol, take a little bandage, a gemi, and wrap it around. But what he can't do, says Rav Yehuda Bered Rav Chiya, is he can't wrap a belt around his finger. When I say a belt, by the way, I'm not talking about the belt that goes around our waist. I'm talking about like a really thin belt. In other words, basically, it's a tiny article of clothing. It's not even a glove. It's like the finger of a glove. Okay? In other words, it is clothing, but like an accessory, like really small. What's the problem? The Gemara spells out the problem. Tzitzel katan have a yisr begadim. At that point in time now, the Kohen is overdressed. Now, by overdressed, I do not mean that he looks good. Overdressed over here, I mean in the most literal sense. Right, meaning that when the Kohen is doing the avoda, the Torah spells out his wardrobe. And for a regular Kohen, a Kohen Ezer, it's four articles of clothing. It is pants, it is a robe that goes over the top, it's a belt, and it's a hat. And that's it. That's the totality of his clothing. It's arba begadim, it's four clothing worn by the Kohen. Can add an article of clothing. So what the Gemara now is arguing is that instead of a gemi, now a gemi is just a bandage. No way we're going to call that an article of clothing. Instead of a gemi, he puts on a tzilzil katan, he puts on a tiny belt around his finger. That's now a fifth article of clothing.
But that's different clothing either. That's a good finger wrapping.
Okay, and another argument you're going to make, or you can make, which the Gemara is about to do, is that that's not where the other clothing is being worn. Okay, so we'll get to that in just a moment. But before we go forward in the Gemara, so let's pause and reflect for just a moment, and what if it is an extra article of clothing? So Ben suggested that that's Spal Tosef, that now you're adding to the mitzvah of the Torah, and he may be right. But as Rashi points out, there's even a larger issue, a bigger problem, if you can imagine. And that is, if a Kohen does the avoda while being overdressed, the avoda doesn't work. It's an ineffective avoda. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi is the second Rashi on the after the Gemara. Rashi writes, Rashi reminds us of the Gemara in Tzvachim, Lava Shnei Mechnasayim. The Kohen wears two pairs of pants. Shnei avnetim, two belts, chaser achas or yoser achas, oshaisal ritia abesaro tachas bigdo, or if he's wearing some sort of ritia, some sort of bandages under his clothing, the avad, and he does the avoda so psula. Rashi says, and Rashi's not saying it, Rashi's quoting the Gemara in Zvachim, the avoda simply is not good. He is rendered the avoda disqualified by wearing too much clothing. Rashi says that's based on psukim. It has to be based on psukim. B'nei Aaron ha-Kohanim b'ki hunam. The B'nei Aaron ha-Kohanim, the definition of a Kohen is b'ki hunam, while they are Kohanim, meaning they have to dress the part. Right? It's interesting. I heard... how long ago? I don't remember. Anyway, about a year ago. Anyway, the idea is that part of the definition of a Kohen is a clothing. You know how clothing makes a man? So by Kohanim, it's like, it's more than just a phrase, meaning that really he is a Kohen defined by the clothing that he wears. B'ki unam klomar, b'big day hejod hazikukin lahem. Kohen hejod shalavish big day kohen gadol v'avad avodah sapsula dahinu yisur begadim. And then Rashi points out also that even if you have a regular Kohen wearing big day Kohen Gadol, that's also Yisur Begadim. That's also extra clothing, and that's also no good. So in other words, again, so what the Gemara's argument is now is that if he, instead of wrapping up his finger with a little palm branch, he wraps it up with a belt, with a small belt, that now is going to be Yisur Begadim, this again, the argument of Rabbi Yehuda Bered Rabbi Chia, it's Yisra Begadim, and therefore it would disqualify the Avoda. Okay, that is opinion number one of the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lo Amar Yisra Begadim, Elo B'Makam Begadim, Avashalo B'Makam Begadim, Lo Have Yisra Begadim. And Rav Yochanan fundamentally disagrees. You can't be Yisra Begadim. Yisra Begadim, the additional clothing that's worn by the Kohen, which would disqualify the Avoda, that's if he wears clothing where he wears clothing. Meaning, like Rashi said, two pairs of pants, two belts. That's Yisra Begadim. But a small little fingerling on his finger, a belt on his finger, that's not Yisra Begadim. Okay. Now, Maybe. But typically, no, according to Rav Yochanan, no. Meaning, it's only going to be a violation of the of Yisra Begadim only where it's where he's wearing his actual clothing. So anywhere else on his body would be fine. Now, v'tepogle mishum chatzitza. Now, the Gemara, perhaps you were bothered by this as well. The Gemara wonders, in other words, if he has something on his hand, wouldn't that represent a chatzitza? We know that the Kohen has to be handling the avoda directly, hand on blood, hand on knife, meaning there can be no chatzitza. Can't wear shoes. So b'smol inami b'yamin v'shlo b'makom avoda. So the Gemara gives very simple answers to that. It could be that the wound is on his left hand. You know, the Kohen is always doing the avoda with his right hand. There's one example, there's one scenario where the Kohen is doing avoda with his left hand. That's a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. But anyway, the avoda is always done with your right hand. Or it could be that the wound is on your right hand, but like on the back of your hand, where the actual where there will be no separation between the avoda and his hand. Well, pligi de Rava, good. So now we have so far two opinions in the Gemara. We have Rav Yehuda. And we have Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yehuda says that if he wears a little belt on his finger, that's Yisra Begadim. Rabbi Yochanan says that's not Yisra Begadim. Yisra Begadim is only in an area where he wears clothing. But if it's an area on his body where he doesn't wear clothing normally, like his hand, that's not Yisra Begadim. Those are the two opinions we have so far, and we have now a third opinion. Well, let's not say a third opinion, but certainly an opinion that argues with Rabbi Yochanan. Upligi de Rava. Rav Yochanan certainly argues with Rava. If it's where the garment is, meaning if he's wearing an additional article of clothing where he wears garments, so then it doesn't have to be a big article of clothing. In fact, all it needs to be is one string, and that will be a chatzitza. Chatzitza over here, don't take the word of the Gemara so super literally. Chatzitza over here just simply means that's extra, that's additional. It's to be regarded. Now, if he wears an extra garment where he doesn't normally wear his big day kahuna, meaning his hands, his feet, shalosh shalosh chotzetzes. So if it's a swatch of clothing that's 3x3, so that would be a chatzitza. Pachus mi shalosh shalosh, ain't a chotzetzes. If it's less than 3x3, so then it's not going to be a chatzitza.
Are they trying to use it?
Yeah, basically, yes. In other words, 3x3, we know that by Tumah.
That varies by the belt.
Correct. So by Tumah, we say 3x3 is normally the shear. Anyway, so good. So we now know Rav Yochanan certainly argues with Rava. So Ad Rav Yochanan Vade Pligi, the Gemara makes this point. Yeah, you're right. Ad Rav Yehuda Bered Rav Yechiel Min Neima Pligi. Is he also arguing with Rav Yehuda? Not necessarily. Meaning, even though Rav Yochanan requires the beged to be 3x3, but it could be that he agrees with Rav Yehuda that if you wear a tiny belt around your finger, so that would also be Yisra Begadim. Shani Tzotzo Katam Dechashiv. Tzotzo Katam is Chashiv. It's significant. Very similar to the idea of when I eat an ant or any small bug, which I don't want to do, obviously, but in other words, if I do, so I'll be in violation of eating a sheretz. Even though I didn't eat it because I, but it's chashav, but it's significant. So here too also, in other words, I have a belt. It's tiny, but it doesn't matter. Meaning once it's fashioned into a belt, so then it's significant even though it's less than 3x3. It could be that Rav Yochanan agrees with Rav Yehuda that a small belt would also represent Yisra Begadim. Yeah, that was my idea. You don't have to love it. Lishna Achrina Amrila Amr Rav Yehuda Bered Rav Chia Loshanu Ella Gemi Aval Tzilzo Katan Chotzeitz. Okay, we're going to do this again, a slightly different format, but basically it's going to be the same basic point. Again, you know, the Gemara has this. The Gemara has two versions of how the discussion went. So the Gemara is going to record both versions, even though there may not be any significant difference between the first and second version. So the Gemara said in the name of Yehuda Breder, Loshana Alagami Aval Tzilta Katan Chod states, Tzilta Katan will represent the Chatzitza. Rav Yochanan Amar, Lo Amar Chatzitza Bepachus Mishal Shashalosh, Ela Bamakam Begadim. If it's less than 3x3, that only represents a problem if you're wearing it where you normally wear clothing. Okay? Now it comes out that that's exactly what Rava says. So could now be that Rava argues with Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says, not necessarily. Shani tzotzel katan dechashev. So, but tzotzel katan is significant, and even though it's less than 3x3, but it could be that that because it's significant, therefore it still would represent a yisur begadim, an additional article of clothing. Ule Rav Yochanan adi ishminin nami, I'm sorry, adi ishminin gemi lishminin tzotzel katan. Now, for Rav Yochanan, simple question. Comes out that according to Rav Yochanan, any time that you're wearing a garment on your body for the Kohen that represents Yisur Begadim, that's an additional clothing. So the Gemara just wonders, well, comes down now that even if I'm wearing a small belt on my finger, so that would represent a problem for the Kohen. That would be Yisur Begadim, additional clothing. Why does the Mishnah give the example of Gemi? Why not give the example of Tzilta Katan? So the Gemara says, and I made this point already earlier, but the Gemara now says it inside. So Milsa Agav Orcha Kamashmalan de Gemi Masai. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Mishnah is giving us a benefit, a bonus teaching. Meaning aside from the halacha that a gemi is not clothing and you can wear the gemi, the Kohen's allowed to wear the gemi, but more than that, the Gemara also wants to tell us that if you have a cut and you want to get healed, so put gemi, put the reed on. The reed has got therapeutic powers to it. We'd probably call that aloe, but you know, same basic idea. Okay. Finally, we're gonna go through the Mishnah and hopefully get our way up to the next Mishnah of the on the next Amud. I know tomorrow will be short. Tomorrow I may let everyone out early for good behavior. See, tomorrow the Mishnah Boskin Melech al Gabe Kevish. Okay, if you're a northerner, if you're a northeasterner, like most of us here in this room, so so you remember the good old days after after a snowstorm, or just not even after a snowstorm, but right, it rained and then it froze overnight. So now you're dealing with an ice slick. So what do we do back in the good old days? I remember this so vividly. I have such a clear memory of this. So we went to the garage, we took the salt out, and we started salting the steps. Now at the time, I thought to myself, what is that? And what that is it's basically what the salt does. It eats into the ice. It breaks down the ice, and it melts the ice. And it's a great way of melting the ice. And now no one's going to slip on the steps and fall in and break their neck. So in the Beis Hamikdash, you had very similar problems, where, in other words, you had a ramp going up to the Mizbeach. Now the incline of the ramp was pretty steep, meaning right. You just plug in the numbers, and you'll figure out what kind of altitude we're talking about, what kind of steepness we're talking about. But it was pretty steep, and on those cold mornings, it was pretty hard to get up the ramp. So what you'd want to do is basically take out the salt and run it over the ramp. Remember, by the way, the Mizbeach Hachitzon was outside. It wasn't indoors. There was a smaller Mizbeach inside the Beis Hamikdash, but that's the Mizbeach HaZahav. But that didn't have a ramp. It didn't need a ramp. The Mizbeach HaChitzon, which was 10 amas into the air, was 20 feet tall, so in order to get to the top, you had to climb up the ramp. So what you would do is you would salt the ramp in order to be able to climb up. This poses two concerns. Number one, there's a Shabbos concern. There's a possible Shabbos concern. And number two, which we'll talk about, and number two, it also represents another concern, which has nothing to do with Shabbos. If I'm salting the ramp, essentially what I'm doing is I'm adding another layer to the ramp. Adding another layer to the ramp, what have I essentially done? I've built onto the structure of the Beis Hamikdash. The structure of the Beis Hamikdash, well, we'll talk more about this in just a moment. The structure of the Beis Hamikdash had to be in compliance with exact measurements. There was an architectural design of the Beis Hamikdash, And everything had to be as exacting as possible to the exact measurements as provided by the design. And the design was done through nevuah, through prophecy. So anytime now I'm adding to the Beis HaMikdash, so I'm in violation of this prohibition. Hard to give this prohibition a name. So right now I'll just simply say adding to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? That's not a Shabbos issue. That's true all 7 days of the week. Okay. So both of these topics we're going to be covering in the Gemara. So that you don't slip and fall, so therefore you could salt the ramp. And you can draw water from the well using the wheel. Now it's a simple machine, by the way. It's a mechanical machine. In other words, you turn the wheel and it draws the water. It's a pulley system. What's the concern? In other words, there's no problem in Shabbos using a simple machine like this. Right? A pulley, a lever. So what's the problem? The problem is it going to become evident from the Gemara, it produces a sound. And sound production on Shabbos may be prohibited. Right? And you notice how cautiously I said it. May be prohibited. And so the point the Mishnah is making is that you could use these apparatuses, you could use these wheels on Shabbos. Mibor agol mibor agadol begalgal b'Shabbos umi be'er hakir b'yantav. And there was another well, the kir well. I don't know where it was. I don't have any information about the actual well itself. But you could use it on yantav. But when the Mishnah says you can use it on yantav, what the Mishnah means by that is yantav but not Shabbos. Okay. Ramele Rav Ika mi Pashrunya la Rava. Tanan boski melcha gabe kefesh b'shushalo yachliku b'mikdash im b'medina lo. Okay. It sounds like from our Mishnah, and certainly in the context of our entire parak, we see that this idea of salting the ramp can only be done in the Beis HaMikdash, can't be done outside the Beis HaMikdash. V'reminu chatzosh in iskalkala b'imei migsham imei v'tevin umar daba. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is that we have a brisa, and the brisa says that if I have a courtyard and it got flooded and it's really hard to walk through the courtyard, so what you could do is you could take straw and lay down on the floor, kind of help people get across, okay, absorb all that moisture, basically give people traction so they can walk on the chatzer. So says the brisa. So the problem is the Mishnah says that I can lay salt down on the ramp in the Beis HaMikdash, which by implication means that I can't lay it down outside the Beis HaMikdash. It would be prohibited to do so. And meanwhile, the Brisa says I can lay straw down in our courtyards, in our homes. So the Gemara says, Shani Tevin Dela Mevatale. So the Gemara says, well, there's a big difference. When I'm laying down straw, my intention is not to leave it over there, meaning it's a temporary situation. And the reason why it's temporary is because it's straw, it's food. Animals are going to want to come and eat it. So therefore, I'm putting it down over there, but I'm not going to leave it. Salt, on the other hand, I'll put it down over there, and there's a chance I'm going to leave it over there. In other words, it'll become part and parcel of the ground. And what could happen? Well, if I smooth it out, so basically I'm going to be working the ground. Right? In other words, leveling the ground. Leveling the ground, as we talked about, is Amalach on Shabbos. That's Ashvui Gumos. And that would be prohibited. So the difference between salt versus straw, I'm not going to leave there, but salt I will. So Amalei Rav Acha Brei Derav La Rav Ashi Hai Melech Echidami. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's analyze this a little bit more. So if we're talking about leaving the salt over there, so we really run into problems. Edom avatle kamosif abinyan. So if I plan on leaving the salt over there, now we're at the ramp. We're talking about the ramp in the Beis HaMikdash. You're adding to the building. And even though we normally skip parentheses here, we're not going to skip the parentheses. Rashi doesn't skip it. I'm not sure why it's in parentheses. But uksiva kol b'ksav miyad Hashem alai hiskil. And the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that's being quoted says that the Beis HaMikdash has to be built to exact specification as laid out in the design, in the architecture. And once you're adding to the building, you're not allowed to do that. You are being mosif ala binyan, which is prohibited, not just on Shabbos, but all week long. And look, if I'm salting the ramp, and I'm not going to leave it there, meaning we're going to put the salt down just so people don't slip and fall, but I also plan on removing the salt. What's the problem? The problem is that when the kohen walks up the ramp, his feet are not touching the ramp. His feet is touching the salt. And that is a chatzitza. And as we know, any time the kohen does an avoda, his feet has to be firmly planted on the ground.
What if there's ice on the ground and there's no salt?
Okay, so my example of ice may not have been so good in terms of the ramp, but if there were ice over there, so then I'd say the same thing. That would be a chatzitza. So b'halachas eivarim lekevish. So the Gemara first attempts to answer this by saying, well, you know, he's not doing a real avoda. He's just bringing the limbs up the ramp. Bringing the limbs up the ramp is, in other words, at this point, the Gemara is thinking, you know what's real avoda? Shechting a carbon. Sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach. Those are real avodas. But if afterwards, in other words, after the shechita, now what's the next step? A couple steps down, but we're going to cut up the animal, and we're going to take the limbs of the animal and walk them up the ramp to the top of the mizbeach. At this point, the Gemara is thinking, that's not a real avoda. And therefore, it's not a big deal if the kohen's feet are not actually touching the ramp. The lav avodahi. So Gemara says, but it's a suggestion. The Gemara immediately rejects it. V'lova haksiv v'ikriva kohenes hakol v'ikter mizbecha v'amamar zu halachas evarim lekevesh. The walking of the limbs up the ramp is an avoda as well. So if it's an avoda, feet have to be on the ramp. So elaim abolachas eitzon lamaracha the lav avodahi. So the Gemara says, okay. So it could be that when we're salting the ramp, it means we're salting the ramp so that the kohen can bring the wood up the ramp. Bringing the wood up the ramp as fuel for the fire, for the top of the mizbeach, that's not an avoda, and that can be done even if the kohen's feet is not touching the ramp.
So they're not really addressing the issue, they're circumventing.
Yeah, in other words, essentially what the Gemara is saying is, that's a really good point. Meaning that if, in fact, you're going to prevent the kohen from touching the ramp with the salt, so then you're right, you would not be allowed to salt the ramp. You're right. The Gemara is really modifying the Mishnah, limiting the Mishnah. Darish Rava. Rava expounds. Whenever you see the word Darish, it means generally, Shabbos, he's in front of a crowd, and now he's saying this to the public. That if I have a courtyard, and it's very swampy, and it's very wet, and I want to be able to walk on it so I could lay down tevin on Shabbos. Lay down straw on the courtyard, in the courtyard. So I'm the Rapapala Ravavatan Kishumar Dana Marda Loba Savaloba Kupa. Ava Ella Bishule Kupa. When you're trying to create this like flooring for the courtyard, so you should not use baskets, you should not use boxes, but you should use the edge of boxes. This is Rashi describes basically broken boxes. Now, by the way, it bothers me, I'm sure it bothers you as well, all right, is there maybe a muksa consideration? Meaning if they're not full boxes, but they're broken boxes? Okay. Anyway, but, and I don't have a good response to that, but anyway, what comes out clearly over here is that you have to lay down the flooring of the courtyard in an unusual way. And so laying straw down would seem to be not acceptable. Hadar ukim Rava Amora Allah Vidarish. So Rava gets up the next day or the next Shabbos and he says, I made a mistake. Open about the mistake that he made, very candid. Dvarim Shamart Levnechem Tawasein Biyadi. I made an announcement last Shabbos that if your courtyard gets very wet, you can lay straw down, and I'm admitting I made a mistake. Barum kachamru mishum Rabbi Eliezer kishumar dein amar de lo besav lo bekupa el beshule kupa. You can only use the edges of boxes, meaning basically broken box material to lay down as flooring on the courtyard. It doesn't. I mean, the way I'm visualizing it, it doesn't sound that practical. But
when you're doing Masala Shabbat, there was a concept that you couldn't sweep the floor. But the idea was that if the dirt gets into the ground, it's like building.
Yeah.
So why doesn't that apply?
I mean, over here, you're not actually manipulating the ground. You're just simply laying something on top of the ground.
Well, you could argue that the hay is filling.
You could argue it. I don't know. The Gemara doesn't seem to be moved by that argument. Okay, now We moved in the Gemara to the topic of the wheel. I know the Gemara didn't give us any much advance notice. The Gemara quoted a little bit of the Mishnah, Mamalami Boragola. But again, let me just frame this next couple minutes of Gemara. Essentially, what's going on now, what's about to happen right now, is that the turning of the wheel makes a sound. And essentially what the Gemara is going to argue and hover between is this idea that you're not allowed to produce a sound on Shabbos. Now, it's a rabbinic prohibition. It falls under the category of you're not allowed to play instruments in general. The question that you're going to see the Gemara basically struggle with is, what kind of sound are we talking about? Are we talking like a musical sound, like a lyrical type of beat, or are we talking about any sound whatsoever? Meaning, even the knock on a door. Okay, so this is where the discussion begins. Ula igla lebe Rav Menashe. So Ula went to the house of Rav Menashe, also who gavra taruf abava. And a guy comes and he knocks on the door. I mean, that's it. He just the knocking on the door, just to basically introduce himself that he's here. So Amar, and he said, and I assume we're talking about Ula, so he said, Manhai, who is this guy knocking on the door? Litachel gufe de kamachal el shabasa. His body should become hollowed out as he is desecrating the Shabbos. Now, that's rough, and I'll admit it. That's a rough way to describe somebody, but, Ula was a principled individual, and Ula felt that knocking on the door was a violation of Shabbos, and so on principle, he was offended.
Because the intent is to produce musical
sound. At this point, the Gemara is now thinking, any sound, any production of sound is going to be prohibited. So Amale Rabba, so Rabba says to Ula, no, it's not a problem. Lo asra ela kol shel shir. Rabba says that no, it's not any production of sound which is going to be prohibited. It's one that basically is going to make some sort of musical accompaniment, like a drum beat. But in other words, if all you're doing is just knocking on the door, that's not a big deal. That's not only not a big deal, it's not Shabbos violation. Now, by the way, even if it's a kosher shir, I think we all understand, meaning that's rabbinically prohibited. It's not asur in the Torah, meaning that there's no of the 39 malachas, playing an instrument is not one of them. What's the concern? We've said this already a number of times. I think we've even said it today already, that if, we certainly said it yesterday, by fixing the instrument, the concern is that if we start playing instruments on Shabbos, the instrument's going to break, we're going to want to fix it, and that's a violation of what's called makeh bepatish, right? You're hitting, making the final blow on the item. Eis ve'abai malam b'diufi matifin mi irak l'chola b'Shabbos. Abai challenges because the Abai says that you're allowed to siphon using a tuba hose, right? Siphoning is not a new phenomena. Siphoning water was back then. You can take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now. Rashi describes at length in terms of how the siphoning actually worked. It was used with a double tube. That's the DUP. DO comes from the same word as duo. Okay, anyway. And also, you can make an IV drip for a chol on Shabbos. Now, it's funny, I'm saying IV drip. You understand, the Gemara is not really describing that, but it basically is that, meaning it's basically a drip that you're creating for the chol on Shabbos. Now, this is not intravenous, right? They were not, back in the 3rd century, they were not, hydrating people intravenously, but they were creating a drip. Why were they doing that? So, as the Gemara will be evident in just a moment, they were doing that because, well, either to try to wake him up, or a smooth sound to try to get him to sleep. So the Gemara now notes, L'chola in L'barilo. You could do it for a chola, right? You could violate Isuri D'Rabbanan for sick people, but you can't do it for a healthy person. Now, why are we doing it? He's sleeping and we want to wake him up. Now, when you wake somebody up, Do you want to play something melodic? No. In other words, when you want to wake somebody up, you want to crash and bang. In other words, you want to make random sounds to get the person up. It sounds now from this discussion that the manufacturing of any sound is going to be prohibited. Shema mina ilu de kala asir. So the Gemara immediately rejects. Lo, detir the kabai delenam. So the Gemara says he's awake, and we basically want him to get his sleep. And so therefore the drip that we're producing has to be melodic. Right? Gemara, it's unbelievable the amount of knowledge the Gemara had in terms of just basic principles, but in other words, basically to create a nice, smooth beat in order so that he could fall asleep. And basically, it's a production of sound in order to pacify him and to move him into sleep. So again, what the Gemara again is hovering between is what kind of sound is prohibited? Any sound? Or it has to be a melodic sound? And again, the Gemara is arguing again and again that it has to be a melodic sound. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll finish up. We'll finish up the sugya. We'll finish up the perek. We'll finish up the mesechta tomorrow. On Shabbos, Shalosh Shudas, we are going to be having a siyum. Siyum is sponsored. In fact, the sponsor is going to be speaking at the siyum. So I guess we'll find out who's sponsoring on Shabbos. And the daf on Shabbos is going to be an hour before Mincha. So that we could start Pesachim on Shabbos as well. So Shabbos, an hour before Mincha, we're going to be learning. And then during Shalosh Shudas, we will be having a siyum on Erevin.